I'm not doing an isser. My Makoros sheets look a lot nicer than this usually. I put a little, the numbers usually have like a bar going across that's colored. It's very fancy. The copy machine didn't really tell all my shvachim here. But forgive me for that. Maybe one time I'll print it and I'll show you what the Makoros sheets are really about. But for now, we'll have to do with this. Hopefully it's clear enough. The font is big enough and the photocopy is clear enough. So hopefully this should work. But just realize that it's usually a little bit more sophisticated. The topic I want to talk about today is something that was not requested last week. Last week, a lot of the questions that were posed during the shiur revolved around the question of toelus, a benefit. Some of the questions from over here, from different sections, were about the question of toelus, meaning sometimes we know lashon hara is usually us, or usually a person is not allowed to speak in a negative way, in a disparaging way about someone else or some other entity in some other institution. You're not allowed to speak negatively about people, but the question is that sometimes there are cases where you have to say something. You see someone who's dangerous, you see someone who is causing issues, you don't want someone to join up in business or go to a certain store. We spoke about shidduchim for a minute. You know, there are different cases where you have a toeles, where you have a case where it's really important that you share some information or that you listen to some information that would otherwise usually be considered lashon hara. And a lot of the questions fielded, understandably, were about that sugya, about toelus, about when is it a benefit, when is it constructive, when is it mutter to speak lashon hara. Now, being that so many questions were asked about that, I decided that we would not talk about that today because I want to keep you guys still coming. So if we do it the second week, you're going to leave after this week. It's not worthwhile. So, but also, on top of that, I think it's important to build sort of in an organized, flowing fashion, conceptually, just to keep the flow of things and understand how the sugya develops, how the sugya of lashon hara develops. And really, the next step on our train ride is not exactly toelus. The next step on our train ride is a different heter, which helps us bring out some other aspects in halachas of lashon hara, some yisodos, some foundational, you know, fundamental principles about the iser of lashon hara. Really stopping first along the way with this issue of well, I guess you can read the title here, is your daily digest kosher. Do people get that? Is that a good line? I don't know. I thought of that last night late. It was going to be something to do with fake news, but I thought that's overused these days. So is your daily digest kosher? Avoiding lashon hara in journalism, blogging, and social media. Some of the aspects we'll raise today in terms of how to understand navigating the field of journalism, of blogosphere, of social media, and the internet in general, and trying to understand what is lashon hara, what's not lashon hara, what should be published, what shouldn't be published, what should be read, what shouldn't be read, what should you write, what should you, etc. All these questions are very critical, very crucial to people who use computers, don't use computers, use the newspaper, don't use the newspaper. So much of our world is about the flow of information here in this digital age. So much of the world is about the flow of information and the passing of information one to another and the learning of information and the wonderful things that is added. So it presents a challenge on top of all the benefits. It presents a challenge in terms of navigating that minefield and trying to maintain proper Jewish speech ethics. So some of the issues we'll raise today will be crucial to that halacha, but it'll also be just general topics, general foundational principles, general yisodos that will help us understand lashon hara just as a part, as a sugya in general. Not necessarily to navigate, is this us or is this mutter in any given case, but to know going forward, what are the things I should consider when I see a new case that we didn't talk about today, when I see a different case on the internet, when I see a different article, when I'm deciding if I should send this letter, if I should forward this email, what should I consider when doing those things? That's what we're really trying to do today. So just to start, we'd have to discuss in general the relationship between Jews and news. In source number one, you see one source, but really it starts a little bit earlier. If you look through the whole Sefer Chavetz Chaim, the entire Sefer, you won't find anything about newspapers. Now that is fascinating, because the Chavetz Chaim was written in, published in what year? I think we mentioned last time. Around 1873, I think, is the answer. 1873, the Chavetz Chaim first published his sefer, Chavetz Chaim, on Hilchos Lashon Hara, Hilchos Rechilos. And the Jewish newspapers, never mind newspapers in general, but Jewish newspapers, from Jewish newspapers, Maskilish newspapers, and frommer Jewish newspapers, were all in circulation at the time in 1873, in Russian and English and Yiddish. All types of newspapers are floating all over the place. And we know for a fact, if you read through, we mentioned some of the biographies last week. We mentioned the biography of Rav Yosher of the Chavetz Chaim. So there he mentions that quite a few times the Chavetz Chaim certainly at least looked at briefly some newspapers, and he definitely even wrote letters to newspapers when he felt he had to make an announcement, when he felt to make an important point in public. So he knew of this idea of newspapers. He knew of that idea of the flow of information. It's fascinating. They would write an entire book on Hilchos Lashon Hara and not once mention newspapers, not once mention journals, not mention that public forum of the flow of information. So that's very fascinating. That's another point. We mentioned last week the article by Dr. Benny Brown, the academic scholar in Eretz Yisrael, who was trying to prove that the Chavetz Chaim was taking steps to do the halachization of Musar, to turn Musar of Lashon Hara into Halachos. Really, the Rishonim, he claims, really the Rishonim thought of Lashon Hara really more of as an ethical mandate, not necessarily such a halacha, not such a rigid, formal, you know, such a rules and regulations, but more of principles of Musar and ethic. So the Chafetz Chaim was trying to turn it more into rules, turn it more into halacha. So that's his argument. We didn't necessarily agree. We just quoted it last week. But one of the points he makes is that in this way, the Chafetz Chaim fell short, because if you're really trying to make something halacha, if you're really trying to prove that something's halachic, and really trying to embed it into your society's brain and into their wavelength to understand how to proceed in daily living. So what do? You give examples from daily living. Hey, I'm talking about Hilchos Lashon Hara. What's the best example to bring? The newspapers, the journals, the nowadays the internet, to talk about the things that are pressing to that door, to that generation. And the Chafetz Chaim, he claims, failed to do that. So it's interesting to note, he's right, that the Chafetz Chaim did leave this out of the Halachos of Lashon Hara, of the Hilchos Lashon Hara Sefer Chafetz Chaim. But if you look in two other places, you'll see the Chafetz Chaim did relate to this this phenomenon of newspapers. He wrote a lot of, we mentioned last week, a lot of short monographs just about the different topics in Yiddishkeit, different Yisurim that he thought we need to be mechazik ourselves and we need to strengthen ourselves in keeping the mitzvahs. So one of the things he wrote was called Zechor LeMiriam, which obviously has to do a little bit with Lashon Hara, because we're talking about Miriam, which we spoke about last week. But the Chafetz Chaim wrote a sefer called Zechor LeMiriam. In the 23rd parak, he writes that a person should absolutely stay far away from reading newspapers. He says it explicitly in this little book. And he writes that the reason is not only what you would think, Lashon Hara and Rechilas. He put that there too. Don't worry, he didn't forget about that. But he says there's also always Kfira and Leitzanis and Pritzis and what else, contentious words, Machlokas, so much stuff that comes up in newspapers that we could be avoided if we just avoided the newspapers entirely, if we didn't read them and put our subject ourselves, our eyes, our minds, our brains to them, to being brainwashed by the culture that's being put into the newspapers. Says the Chafetz Chaim, you'd be better off. Just stay away from newspapers in general. Now, just suffice to say, he wasn't talking about the New York Post. You know what I'm saying? He wasn't talking about the modern, you know, newspaper. And if you like the New York Post, then insert whatever one you don't like. I'm just trying to make some people laugh about something. But so the Chafetz Chaim said, you know, insert whatever newspaper. It wasn't exactly what we have nowadays. Says the Chafetz Chaim, even though the newspapers back then were intellectually stimulating and they were more informative and they were more important, they told you when there was a war going on. You wouldn't have known from the radio. You wouldn't have known from the internet. It was important to see the newspaper. Says the Chafetz Chaim, even so, the disadvantages outweigh the advantages, and a person should really avoid seeing all of that garbage within the newspaper, says the Chafetz Chaim. Now that's one a point the Chafetz Chaim raises. If you look in one of the books that his son, Rabbi Arye Leib HaKohen, wrote, this one, you know, he wrote a couple of different short, partial biographies of the Chafetz Chaim. So this is in one of them, the Digmos of his father. So he writes in this book that the Chafetz Chaim himself had the practice of never looking at a newspaper. Now, we noted before, that's not entirely true. If you look in the biographies, he did once in a while look in the newspaper. So, okay, there's a little bit of hagiography going on there. But basically speaking, the rule, you know, the exception proves the rule, so to speak. The rule is that the Chafetz Chaim did not himself look in newspapers. And he says a different reason entirely. The Chafetz Chaim's son, Rabbi Arye Leib, says, not necessarily because of the kfir and the leitzanis and the lashon hara and the pritzis and all the things that happen in a newspaper. Says the Chafetz Chaim, I have a totally different reason that I avoid the newspapers. It's so depressing. Every time you open a newspaper, what do you see? About a murder, about a death, about some other tzara, some other tragedy. And he says, I know what this world is already. I know about Hester Panem. I know what the world looks like. I know what's out there. I know the tragedy that's befalling our people and other people all around the globe. I don't need to subject myself to that depressing content every single day on a daily basis. And the Chafetz Chaim said, in general, he therefore didn't want to put himself in that situation and avoided looking in the newspapers. Now, suffice it to say, that's not the consensus of the Jewish tradition in general, but even of the postgame of the Gedolei Tzadikim in particular. The Gedolei the Tzaddikim generally are aware of what's going on in the world. They do try to pay attention to what's going on in the world. Even the Chafetz Chaim himself, you know, it's hard to say that he was sort of like a hermit and socially, you know, a recluse. Like we said last week, my friend told me, listen, I pronounced the recluse wrong. How do you really pronounce it? Recluse, yes. So I was saying last week, recluse a lot. He was very offended. He went to law school. I went to smicha, so that's why we're, you know, parted ways there. But whatever he was, a hermit is a word that I can't pronounce. So he wasn't a social hermit that he locked himself up in a closet. He did know what was going on in the world. But someone who's a big genius, someone who knows what's going on around him, has the ability to pick up on things without subjecting themselves to what he thought was inappropriate to read the newspapers daily. So he had a way of finding out what was going on without really reading on a daily basis. But the other gedolim didn't take that approach. Most famously, the Netziv, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, the great Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin in the 19th century. So he famously was very makbid. He was very careful about reading the newspapers regularly. They say that the censorship in this case really is at fault for publicizing this fact, because Rabbi Dr. J.J. Schachter, people have heard of him, he's a scholar and a Rav, so he has so a lot of people have heard of him, it sounds like. So he has done a lot of studies about this. It really is his one of his breakthrough studies early on, you know, in terms of my life, early on in his career. I'm sure he's going for a long time before that. But he pointed out a whole article where he, you know, kind of exposed some censorship that was going on, specifically in the writings of the Netziv and in the writings about the Netziv. If you look in the Netziv's Tshuvas, so in the earlier editions of his Tshuvas and of his Parsha Svarim also, Hemek Davar and his different Svarim ala Torah, so the Netziv often references articles in newspapers and even references that he's replying to articles in newspapers and even references that he wrote articles in newspapers. It comes up a lot of times in the Tshuvas and in the Svarim, but if you look in the later editions, those places are just like white spots, you know, just like kind of missing. And Dr. Schachter pointed out, with the help of others, Dr. Lyman was helpful in this as well, that there are places where there was censorship, clearly pointing out that the Netziv really did read a lot of newspapers, and that's why we had to censor him so much, to make sure that nobody Chas Shalom thought that he would look at the newspapers. So really the censorship shot itself in the foot in that sense. The other reason that it's famous that Netziv wrote read newspapers, rather, is for a totally different reason. The Gemara in Shabbos really starts with the Mishnah on Kuf Mem Ches. It continues on Kuf Mem Tes. The Gemara says that a person shouldn't read mundane documents on Shabbos. Shabbos is for Kedusha, for Dibre Kedusha, for learning, for davening, for reading maybe a Gadol biography, whatever it might be, for talking about Dibre Kedusha. Shabbos is not for reading business documents, for reading letters, for reading mundane matters. That's what the Mishnah and the Gemara tell us. You shouldn't write a menu and then read your menu on Shabbos. A lot of different halachas there that come out of that, but basically speaking, a person is not supposed to read Shtari Hadyot, those basic mundane matters on Shabbos. Reserve it for Kedusha, reserve it for Torah and Tefillah. Now, based on that, you know, we're streamlining a lot here because there's a lot to talk about in terms of the Rishon and the Poskim. But streamlining from there, the basic maskana is that if you look in the Sefer Shmiras Shabbos Kelchasa, which is really, you know, very dominant in terms of how we paskin halacha l'maisa and hilchos Shabbos. It really informs most of the Shmiras Shabbos across the globe, mostly based on, you know, Piskei Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, as famously noted, but it's not written by him. But again, it's a very important sefer. Shmiras Shabbos Kelchasa says that a person cannot read newspapers or magazines on Shabbos, period. He says even if you're not verbalizing, vocalizing the words, if you're not pronouncing the words out loud, you're just reading it in your head, you're scanning with your eyes. So reading the newspaper or reading the journals or reading the magazine is inappropriate on Shabbos because of this issue, says the Gemara. Don't read Shtari Hadyotos, don't read mundane articles, mundane letters, mundane matters on Shabbos. Now, the post can discuss whether that's only magazines with a business section or even magazines that don't have a business section. There's a lot to talk about in terms of the details, but basically speaking, that's what the Shmiras Shabbos Kelchasa quotes. If you look in the Tshuvas, I quoted one over here in source number one, the Shvas Yaakov, but if you look also in the Shelas Yaivitz or Yaakov Emden in Chelek Aleph of his Tshuvas, they both write a little bit more makel. They say, nowadays it's so important to know what's going on. A war could break out at any moment, apparently, or there could be a pogrom or something like that. Maybe they were even referring to pogroms when they said war. I don't know what they were referring to, but anything could happen at any moment. You need to be informed. You need to know what's going on a minute-to-minute basis. It wasn't even minute-to-minute back then. It was day-to-day because it was published daily, but you needed to know on a day-to-day basis what was going on in the world. So they give heterim that's almost like pikuach nefesh to read a newspaper on Shabbos. If you look at source number one, Val Dvar Kriyas Hanaya Zeitung. People here, a little Yiddish, some Yiddish speakers here. Naya Zeitung, right? News. Okay, good. Yeah. Very, very easy one, right? That was a toss-up. So the Shvus Yaakov and the Rabbi Yaakov Emden both point out that really there is reason to be makel nowadays. Now, some of the later posts can point out that those rules don't, those, you know, svaras, those logics don't really apply to our door nowadays. We could find out information if we need to a lot faster than opening up the daily newspaper and reading it on a Shabbos morning. If we needed to know something, we would know, you know, at the blink of an eye, we would know what was going on in the world. But, you know, it's worth asking a shaila. But basically speaking, the consensus of the poskim was to avoid newspapers, except for there's few poskim who said there was really a pikuach nefesh, a real need to read the newspapers on Shabbos. Now, here's where the interesting part starts. If you look, you would expect that the gedolim in general did not read newspapers on Shabbos. Even if they read newspapers, they didn't do so on Shabbos. But if you look, Dr. Schachter points this out. It's also continued to be pointed out continually by a person named Eliezer Brod, who's one of the editors on the website called Svarim Blog, which publishes a lot of these type of things, not only exposés but also interesting articles. So he's done a lot of work, legwork, you know, kind of exposing these details. But the Netziv, it said in the original translation, in the original of the Sefer Makor Baruch, which is a biography of the Netziv by his nephew, of Baruch Epstein, the author of the Torah Tamima. In English, it's called My Uncle the Netziv, because it was about his uncle, the Netziv. So it says there that the Netziv used to wake up in the morning on Shabbos morning, and one of the first things he would do, I don't know if he made Berachas Torah first, I don't know if he learned Seder first, Davin first, whatever, but one of the early things he would do in the morning is read the newspapers, even though it was Shabbos, and even though he was in the Tziv, and even though he wore a hat, all those things didn't stop him. He read the newspaper on Shabbos morning. So that is famous, and it's not necessarily the Haskam of the postkin, but it's famous that the Tziv read newspapers and even read newspapers on Shabbos. That's why it's most famous, I guess, that the Tziv was the one who did so. But either way, what we see from all those details, you know, they're really just details on Halacha and Hilchos Shabbos and Halacha in general, but what we do see from all that, what we can glean, is that there's a toelas, right? There's a benefit, there's an advantage to being informed, to knowing what's going on. Whether you're a rabbi, whether you're a layman, whether you're just a person who's living in the shul, whatever it might be that you're doing. So if you know what's going on, if you're an informed citizen, if you know what's happening in the world around you, whether it's a war or whether it's something else that might be either dangerous or helpful to you, so that's important. Whether that has to take place on Shabbos, I don't know. That's a different discussion. But the fact is that to be an informed, not only consumer, but also just an informed living citizen of this world, you sometimes need to know what the news is. You sometimes need to know what's going on so you can hold a conversation, so you can protect yourself, protect your family, and get your family the best advantages you can give them. So it's important to read the newspapers. And in fact, for Rabbanim, it's also true. In order to be informed about the society around you, to know the socio-political ideologies and trends that are really, you know, all over the world, and that you have to relate to, have, make an effective drasha, and to be able to sort of answer shailas that are assessed based on the common metzias of the current facts on the ground, or just to be able to guide people spiritually. People are asking you from this door, from this generation, with their metzias around them, you need to know what's going on. So the rabbi, the layman alike, everyone really has some reason to take advantage of newspapers. And so it becomes important to realize, yeah.
Oh, I just wanted to know, when did the
Nitziv
live?
In the 19th century, 1816 to 93, that range. I don't know if it, you know, I probably made up some of those numbers, but no one here is checking right now, right? So, yeah, the internet. Well, you're not allowed to use the internet. We're going to get there. You're not allowed to use the internet. So that's basically just a roundup of the fact that it is important, I guess, to see the information in the newspapers. And there's relevant, important information. Now, the Chavetz Chaim pointed out, aside from the depressing factor, there's also kfira, late sunnis, and preetzes, and all these terrible things in the newspapers. Let's assume for a second, and I know this is a bold assumption, but let's assume if we stuck with a Jewish newspaper, if we stuck with a paper that tried purposely to avoid the kfira, avoid the late sunnis, avoid the preetzes, again, maybe a bold assumption, let's assume we could find the Jewish newspaper like that, and that's probably why in the 1800s the Jewish newspapers really founded, to give an alternative to the, you know, the stuff that was going on in the non-Jewish newspapers. So if we could find such a newspaper that avoided all those negative ideas and images, so then we would maybe be able to, and maybe we should take advantage of newspapers, read them, write them, publish them, etc. But there's one other issue which we haven't dealt with, and that's really why we're here, obviously, which is the issue of Lashon Hara and Rechila. So that, you know, I don't know if I can avoid just by having a Jewish person be the editor, a Jewish person be the writer or the publisher, just because it's a Jewish person publishing it, maybe they'll take out the kfir, the etzanos, but are they able to avoid the Lashon Hara? And if they don't, are we able to participate in either publishing, editing, buying, writing, whatever, you name it, or on the other end, consuming and reading and digesting that newspaper? Is that kosher? Is that allowed to take advantage of the, again, the benefits that it does present are there, but do the negatives outweigh the positives in the sense that the Lashon Hara and the Rechilas that are contained in these items, you know, deny us the right to utilize them? So if you look in source number 2, the first thing we really have to point out is that the Isser Lashon Hara we spoke about last week, we titled, I think, something like, what does speaking bespeak? So mostly what we spoke about last week was speaking, was talking Lashon Hara, and that's clearly the most common, you know, application of Isser Lashon Hara, talking, speaking about Dvarim, Ra'im, Dvarim Megunim. But if you look in source number 2, this is in Klal Aleph, Sif Ches, and the Chavetz Chaim, in Hilchos Lashon Hara, Isser Zesh Lashon Hara, Hu Beinim Hu Mesapar La Befiv Mamish, it's whether you're talking with your mouth, literally verbalizing it, oh, Shukosiv Alav Davar Zeb Mechtavo. Says the Chavetz Chaim, there's absolutely no difference whether you're talking about Lashon Hara, or whether you're distributing Lashon Hara through writing, through a letter, or whatever it might be. All of those things are considered Lashon Hara. The Chavetz Chaim goes on to explain that even if you didn't write the letter, but someone wrote an embarrassing letter and you showed the letter to someone, so you didn't write anything, you didn't say anything, but you showed it to someone, all these things, and again, apply that to forwarding emails in your mind, something embarrassing that you're showing to someone, it doesn't really matter how you say it or how you expose the Dvar Magunim that you're exposing, as long as it's being exposed, as long as you're showing these things to someone else, that's an issue whether it's verbal or whether it's in writing. Now that makes a lot of logical sense to us, that's intuitive, right? Because what's the Isser of Lashon Hara? It's not really about speaking or causing damage through your mouth, it's about communicating, and communication can take place in many forms. So it used to take place in speech, and then it started to take place in writing. Now it takes place in writing on a computer, texting, voice notes, whatever. All the ways of communication doesn't really matter as long as you're communicating the content, as long as that Lashon Hara is being passed along. So then seemingly you're up the creek, you're in the same issues of Lashon Hara as you always have been. Now the most important thing to contend with, which we said we're not going to deal with this year, but I lied, the most important, which is another issue of speech, we'll talk about another time, the most important thing to contend with right now in order to find a way to allow us to publish newspapers is there are cases where it's important for people to know what's going on, even if it would normally constitute Lashon Hara. There are times where it's important for people to know that, for example, someone acted inappropriately, for the public to know that some public figure or some private figure who people might end up dealing with in business or in shidduchim or something like that committed some crime or acted in some way that puts other people at risk or puts you at risk in the future. Not risky to you at the moment, but you shouldn't be doing business with this person, or this person shouldn't be allowed near such and such parts of your family, whatever it might be. So those cases are a little bit less tricky in the sense that it's a little more obvious that they're litoel, it's a little more obvious that they should be publicized. And the Chavetz Chaim does relate to that, but if you look in the letters of the Chazon Ish has... now they have three volumes, I think, of called Kovitz Igros Chazon Ish, which are, you know, beautiful letters. His lashon, his language is very beautiful, very poetic. It's almost like reading Rav Kook. A little bit easier, I would say, than reading Rav Kook. But the Chazon Ish has these beautiful letters, three volumes. In one of the letters there, he writes that this is obvious. It's obvious that if you need to make sure there's accountability, you need to make sure that a person is responsible for his actions. So if he's a public figure, he has to know that if he acts in the wrong way or if she acts in the wrong way, that will be publicized. People will know about that. Otherwise, there's no checks. There's no system that's going to keep this person in place and keep this person in check, rather, and keep this person from committing those sins because there's no public humiliation. But the second we offer an opportunity that if the person's going to mess up, it's going to be publicized. People will know about this. There's a certain level of accountability, of responsibility that a person will have to use when choosing how to act. And so that's why the Chazon Ish says it's important to make sure that we allow for these litoelas, these beneficial, these constructive ways of publicizing information in certain contexts and in certain situations. If it's not that situation, or if a person is exaggerating, or if a person is, you know, doing it in an extremely malicious way, so then we have to judge if it's really the right thing to do. But generally speaking, if you do it the right way, the what's in the house on the side, maybe we'll talk a little bit about that next week or another week, the what's in the house on the side, but if you do it in the proper way, in the proper context, says the Chazon Ish, it's very important that these things be publicized in the right manner. And the second reason is not only because the person needs to be held accountable, but as we mentioned before, you know, it's also important for us as readers. I once, when I was still single when I was younger, a bunch of years ago, so I read an article about a public Jewish figure who had committed some crime, and he had been caught committing the crime, and a Jewish website published that. Now, first of all, it happens to be in that case that it wasn't clear that he had been convicted yet, so that's a different issue, right? Because we're not really sure that he did what he did, and that right now it's just a hearsay at this point. But imagine that it was completely true. So I asked Rav Schechter at the time, you know, is it really right for me to read that? Is it really right for me to look at this? I'm never going to... You know, I don't know, he's never going to hurt me. I was never doing, you know, business with this guy. Well, he didn't cause me harm until now. What's the problem? So he said it's important for people to know for two reasons. One, you know, you should know in advance not to get into a business dealing with this guy. True, right now it's not shaykh, right now it's not relevant, you're not probably going to meet this guy in the street at any point soon, but you should know down the line that you don't want to get involved with a person like this, or him, or people related to him, or the people who are involved in his crime, so you want to stay away from him. But secondly, and I think this is a really important point, sometimes the toelas, the benefit, comes in a backwards way, in the sense that sometimes you read an article and you take musr from it. Sometimes you read an article and you say, you know, it depends on the crime and it depends on what happened, but sometimes you say, you know, that could have been me. And like, it's not so crazy. I knew this person, or I don't know this person, but I know his type, and I know her type, and I know what it is, and I get what brought them to do this this scandal. I get it. And you know what? If I see this article, I start to think about the, you know, how I have to act myself, and how I have to prevent myself from these things, and I have to have my friends be mechazik each other, and make sure that we don't fall into these issues. And the toelas, the benefit, can be wide-ranging in that sense, that if you read these articles and you see what's going on in the world, so you're able to protect yourself both from becoming the victim and from becoming the perpetrator. And that's important. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos tells us, "Al tamen ba'atzmecha ad yom moscha." A person can't trust themselves until the day of their death, because we're always prone to failure, we're always prone to sin, and we have to find a way to protect ourselves in every situation. So those are really the advantages of publishing things in newspapers. The Chazon Ish makes the point of saying that accountability, we're making the point of saying it'll protect you from others and from yourself. And with all those things combined, it has to be done in the proper way. What is the proper way? How is something properly published in a newspaper? How is something properly told, litoelas, in a beneficial, constructive way? So if you look in source number 3, the Chavetz Chaim presents for us 7 conditions. Wow, 7 conditions for how to properly talk Lashon Hara litoelas, how to properly say Lashon Hara in a beneficial way. According to the Chavetz Chaim, in most cases, not all cases, but in most cases, if you're missing any of these conditions, if any of these things are not present, so you've done the Isser of Lashon Hara, you've done the wrong thing by spreading this information. Let's read them very quickly, very briefly. We'll probably come back to this in another week. Chavetz Chaim says in source number 3, you have to have witnessed it firsthand, or it has to become, you know, abundantly clear that the case is so. Meaning, you might not have witnessed it firsthand, but you know, the court case was on TV and everyone saw the guilty verdict, and the guy admitted to it. Whatever, you put all together all the things, 100 witnesses, and the guy admitted to it. So whatever, either you witnessed it firsthand or that happened, that's important. 2, do not jump to conclusions. If you think that what he did is usser, but you're not 100% sure if what was done was usser, so then you have to think a little bit harder. Was it, you know, if he ate, you know, you saw someone eating chalav stam, so don't jump to publish in the newspapers. Maybe it's okay. Maybe it's just a chumrah to not eat chalav stam. Maybe he's allowed to not eat chalav yisrael once in a while. Maybe, I'm not sure. Not passing on that. But, you know, don't jump to conclusion on what's usser, what's not usser. Three, try rebuking the perpetrator first. Try giving tochacha. Try giving mussar. Try schmoozing with this person. You know what you did was wrong. Now, this isn't going to work in every case, right? If we're talking about a case where a person's a menace to society, he's dangerous, she's dangerous, so you're not, you know, going for a schmooze, you know, on a late night in their house alone. That's not really such a good idea. But if you have a situation where it's a little bit lesser crime or a little bit lesser an infraction or something like that, and you're able to schmooze with the person, so you should definitely take advantage of that opportunity and do so first. Four, do not exaggerate. No matter how much you need to tell this story, no matter how much you need to publicize what happened, to keep yourself safe, to keep people, other people safe, to expose the crime or the wrongdoing, do not exaggerate. It cannot be exaggerated. It has to be told exactly as it happened. Five, have pure intentions. That's a difficult one. But if a person hates the person he's talking about, or if a person dislikes just for any reason, or maybe it's a business competitor and you're reporting on the business, conveniently you found out that your competitor in business has been embezzling or has been laundering money or something like that. I don't know the difference between embezzlement and laundering. I'm just saying. So if you have no pure intentions, if you hate the guy and you're trying to bring him down, so that calls into question your motivation here, that could be an issue as well. Six, there are no other options. If you're able to like, kind of trip him on the way and then the cops will catch him, you don't have to publicize it, so then you should do that. You shouldn't take extreme stance of going into the newspapers and publishing it. Seven, no undue damage will come to the subject. Some damage is going to come in these cases. Maybe the person will go to jail. Maybe the person will be embarrassed in public. Maybe the person will lose business, lose shidduchim opportunities. Bad things will happen to the person you're reporting, but it has to be that no undue damage will happen. If the crime is very minor and you report it in a very public manner, so sometimes a person can lose their entire life based on nothing. They did almost nothing. Maybe they should have been reprimanded, maybe they should have been stopped, maybe they should have been told not to do whatever they're doing. And I'm not referring to anything in particular, but if you think in your minds, you can have probably conjure up images of what these cases might be. Someone did basically nothing, not really, not such a big deal, something he should have gotten a slap on the wrist for, and he ended up losing his job, losing his parnas, losing his family, etc. So we have to be careful about all those things. The Chafetz Chaim spells out seven ways to be careful about all those things and to prevent ourselves from causing any undue or undeserved damage. Yeah.
I once heard a reference to a Gemara that said, if someone comes and asks you for a cup of sugar, and you say, go next door to my neighbor who likes to bake,
I would like to get to that.
And none of those things apply.
Right. So I will get to that. So the reason none of those things apply to that is twofold. Either because we don't pass like that Gemara, so no one talks about it. That's one option. Some of the posts can point out. We're going to expand on it hopefully soon. We're going to elaborate on that soon. And the second reason that, so let's just leave it for now and we'll come back to it. But the real answer to your question is that some of the Gemaras just say a case. They don't tell you all of the rules behind it. The Chafetz Chaim found all the other Gemaras and all the other Rishonim who spelled out the rules in that case, and you have to apply it to that Gemara backwards. You have to work backwards in that sense. But you're 100% right. There's a Gemara like that. We'll get there hopefully in a minute. If I forget, you'll remind me soon. So that's the basic gist of the ways to get through the conditions of saying Lashon Hara L'Tovelis. Now, what do you think? Is every newspaper that's published going to meet all these requirements? It's a pretty tall order. Okay. So you could take two approaches. You could say, the Chafetz Chaim. Who's the Chafetz Chaim anyways? I wouldn't recommend saying Lashon Hara and the Chafetz Chaim if I were you. Not a smart idea. But if you wanted to say that, okay, so some of the posts give him, do away with some of his, some of the things he writes, but certainly some of these points, do not exaggerate. That goes against the entire spirit of sensationalism that exists nowadays. All of news, whether it's true news or fake news, doesn't really matter. All the news has some level of exaggeration, some level of political polarization. Those things do exist. Try rebuking the perpetrator first. Okay, maybe it wasn't possible, but do you always have no other options? Is there always no undue damage? Is it never blown out of proportion? All these things have to be considered. It's a very tall order. It's very hard to find the case where you'd have a newspaper that was allowed to publish such information. If you had that case, great, gewaldig. So the Jewish newspaper would be allowed to go into business, would be allowed to publish those stories, and it would be doing a mitzvah in many cases, right? In many cases, exposing the criminal activity or exposing the issues that are going on in the story would be a mitzvah, would be a toelis, would be beneficial to society. So in those cases, it would be a mitzvah, it would be a wonderful thing that they're being mafarsing, they're publicizing these issues. But in so many cases, you point out, in so many cases, it's hard to find a case where they'll actually meet this requirement. Now, that being said, so we're just assuming that a lot of newspapers will have Lashon Hara being published all the time, right? That's what it kind of sounds like. So who violates the Isser? Who's doing the Isser when the Lashon Hara is published in the newspaper? Who's doing the Isser? What do you think? What are the options? The writer is writing a story. The writer is writing a story. Fine, so that doesn't sound so good. The publisher, now think about it. The writer wrote a story, but it would have just sat on his desk or on his computer screen for the rest of his life unless a publisher said, hey, I'll take that and I'll publish it. Who else is involved?
The reader,
good. That's the last one we'll get to. Obviously, most important probably for the crowd. Is anyone here a journalist? I'm not going to disparage you in public. I just want to know. Okay, good. Okay, so you'll leave for that part. But so there's the journalist, there's the writer, there's the publisher. There are editors, people who look at the words and say, oh, yeah, that's good to go. Well, they're basically giving their stamp on whatever you wrote. There are distributors. There are people who, sometimes, the person who's, I guess, the guy who throws the newspaper to your door, you know, usually is not a Jewish person, but there are people along the way who help with the printing and help with the process of putting the papers out. So there's a lot of people along the way. So who violates the issue? Who does the issue over here? What do you guys think? Any Saras? All of them. Okay, we have our first Machmir over here. I don't want to go down as the one who said it. So all of them. That's an interesting svar. So some of the posts can point out, we've mentioned in the past, Rav Moshe Kaufman, who wrote a sefer called Zerah Chaim. Rav Moshe Kaufman has a super commentary on the Chafetz Chaim. So in the back of this super commentary, he has longer shtickle Torahs. And one of the shtickle Torahs he calls a kuntris be'inyan, you know, zehiris mi lashon hara be'itonim, something like that. Basically where he says, I'm going to discuss for you a whole short mini series, so short mini book, I don't know, 10 pages, 12 pages, something like that, on the issues that will come up when you're writing, reading, publishing, etc., a newspaper or a journal of that nature, meaning public information through these means of journalism and newspapers. So he says he has a whole kuntras, he has a whole book, little book, on that. So in that book, he writes that you could really clear over here. You could have a little bit of a chakira, a lamdish chakira. You would hear this in the Beis Medrash, you know, in the guys in the yeshiva are handling about this. Yeah, the writer wrote it, but then he made a shliach to publish it, and we know ein shliach l'dvar avero, which means that if a shliach, if an agent publishes the material, so the agent is responsible because they chose to publish it, a whole lumdus, and he basically says you could get the writer off scot-free because the writer wrote it, but nothing would have happened to the material if he had written it. It would have stayed on his desk and remained there forever. So maybe there's no issue with the writer and he loses his culpability. The Shilas Chuvas Az Nidbru, in I think the 14th section of his lot of Chuvas, where Binyamin Zilber has some Chuvas about, important Chuvas about Lashon Hara. So in one of them, I think in the 14th section of his Chuvas, Rabbi Binyamin Zilber writes just the opposite. He says it's true that the publishers distributed and the editors edited and the distributors put it out. But basically speaking, who put together, who crafted this Lashon Hara, who, you know, composed it? The writer. The publisher just wants to make money. He just wants to get this article out there so that he has a full newspaper. He doesn't care what the tochen is. He doesn't care what the content is. I would debate about that, by the way. I would debate whether that's really true. I think the publisher takes a little vested interest in what's going into the articles. And in fact, I think they reject a lot of articles. I've never been rejected. I'm not speaking out of like anger, but maybe you've been rejected before. I don't know. We could talk later. But the publisher certainly has. You've been rejected? What? Okay. So the publisher, I think, does care, but he argues maybe the publisher doesn't care. Yeah.
Heard by anybody else, but the newspaper, the person who's writing,
Excellent. So actually, there's interesting discussion about diaries in general. If you write Lashon Hara in diaries, sometimes, you know what happens with diaries after people pass away? Sometimes people read them. Just in case any of you are keeping diaries, you should know that. So that is a discussion, whether you're allowed to reveal those things, and were you really writing it with the intention to keep it secret? But that's important to point out also. Even if you say that the publisher was the one who ultimately put it out, but the writer wasn't really writing it to stay on his desk, okay, maybe it would have ended up on his desk, got rejected, but he was writing it to publish it, so that should add, you know, culpability to the person. I agree.
He initiated
the whole process. I agree with all of those points, which is why I really, you know, humbly disagree with everyone who's arguing about this. Just because Rav Schechter likes to point out, one time I came over to him, I had a question about Hilchos Chanukah, and he gave me an answer, and I tried to argue with him, and I was giving a whole, in my head, it was a fancy lumdus, it was probably, you know, silly in hindsight, but I gave him a whole fancy lumdus of Chetz Gavra, this and that, a whole shtickel Torah, and he just looked at me and said, you know, not everything's Nashim Nezikim. Not everything is the lumdus. Not everything is Chetz Gavra. Not everything is debated in the yeshivas, like with yeshivisha words. That's not how every sugya is supposed to be debated. Some things are cut and, you know, it's just obvious, black and white, what the halacha should be. Here, that's how it would seem to me. If you were involved, if you initiated, or if you published it, or if you put it out, or if you were involved in the editing process, whatever you did, if you were a party to that crime, if you were part of that infraction, if you helped with the violation of this issur, so it doesn't matter which way you helped in, you were helpful in initiating, or you were helpful in publishing the end line, doesn't matter. You were involved, then you should be held accountable. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows how to judge the level of your involvement in each case, but a person who is involved should be held accountable for what that person did. So, if we're going to say that there's an issue of newspapers, and we'll hopefully defend some of it, but if we're going to say there's an issue with newspapers, so the Lashon Hara that's there, you know, no one's really getting off free here. So you weren't the only machmer. Don't worry. No one's really getting off free here. Everyone's really involved. Everyone who's involved in some way puts their efforts into this Lashon Hara being publicized, so they should be held accountable and judged accordingly. That wasn't like a curse. It came out like a curse. I'm just saying that should be the fact. Okay. Now, the other issue that comes up, and this is going to, we're going to eventually get to your Gemara over here. The other issue that comes up is something I think is a little more famous and a little more on the, you know, kind of the top of our minds when we think about journalism, which is what's different. You know, when I go over privately to someone and whisper, you know, a disparaging word, whisper a gnai into that person's ear, that's one type of speaking Lashon Hara, right? That's one type of thing, spreading a rumor. What's different about journalism? What's different about the internet? What's different about social media? What's different about these cases? About a newspaper? Very public. It's very public. Now, people tend to argue. Sometimes you'll hear someone say this. Again, we mentioned last week, you know, when someone says, it's not Lashon Hara, it's true. So we said, that's not a real halachic argument. But sometimes people will say, it's not Lashon Hara, it's public knowledge, right? So there's some idea, some concept of that. Here, it's a different story, right? In a sense, it's different in that the newspaper publishing is a very public audience. It's publicized, and everyone's really digesting this in a massive, vast way. So, if that's the case, does that affect our case positively or negatively? What do you think? Positively or negatively? Does that hurt the cause or help the cause? Does that make it more us or less us?
Less us.
Yeah, why?
Because if you are giving a shiur and I quote you to someone when I walk out the building...
You have to say shlita if you quote me. You know that, right? I just want to make sure you know. Okay, yeah?
I think you've said it publicly. If you've said it to everybody...
Good.
There's no reason why I can't...
Excellent.
Tell it to anybody.
Any other points to raise?
Well, everybody interprets it differently.
Very good also. Everyone interprets things differently, so that makes... I think that's a cause for being more careful, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. Anything else?
It could be refuted.
It could be refuted if it's more public, kind of like we spoke about last week. If it's true, I have no chance of denying it. If it's false, I could fight back. Okay, good. So good.
Regarding the newspaper, do we know that these things are true? Let's say they say...
Another excellent point.
How do we know?
In so many cases, especially in a newspaper, especially nowadays, so many cases we don't actually know for sure. We can't verify, or it'll be hard to verify in most cases that something's actually true. And even if something is true, it's not true yet. In the sense that sometimes they'll catch a guy doing a crime and they'll have pictures of him going to jail. He's not going to jail. He's going to bail, and he's going to wait 6 years until he goes to trial, and he might be innocent. I know it's not always the case, but he might be innocent. And so we can't really verify. It'd be physically impossible to verify some information. 100% true as well. So. All these things are factors to take into account in terms of journalism. One thing people didn't mention over here is that, what about on the other end of things? Let's say I'm speaking Lashon Hara in public. Is that less or more usser? If I'm speaking it in public for the first time, that should be more usser, right? In the sense that not only...
Because it's public.
Because you're publicizing it very public. It's more embarrassing. It's more humiliating. That's another thing to take into account. Now, since these things are very unclear, the Gemara decided to clarify by saying something even less clear. The Gemara in source number 4, the Gemara in Bava Basra and Lama Tes, it's also Gemara in Arach and Tes Zayin, the Gemara says, the Amar Rab Bar of Huna, see in source number 4, Kol Milsa de Misamar, the English underneath is a translation, I think it's a loose translation, but it's my translation of this Gemara. It's sort of a cryptic statement. Kol Milsa de Misamar Ba'ape Tlasa, any words, anything, thing is a good translation, which is said in the presence of three people, ba'ape tlasa, in the face, in the presence of three people, a public forum, leis b'mishum lishna bisha. There is no isser of lashon hara, there is no prohibition of lashon hara in that case. Meaning, if anything is said in public, if anything is said in front of three or more people, there is no isser of lashon hara. Now, that is tough to swallow, because what that sounds like it means at face value, and the Chafetz Chaim says, don't worry, this is not what it means, but what a person might have thought that it meant is that the Gemara is saying that if I say Lashon Hara to one person, that's an Isser, that's no good. If I say it in public, if I publicize Lashon Hara in front of the whole crowd, then it's okay, then it's not Lashon Hara. So that's a little bit tough to swallow. That's hard to understand. How could it be that the more you publicize, the more public the nature of your Lashon Hara is, the more humiliating, the more embarrassing, the more detrimental it could be to the person, to the subject, so how could it be less Usser? It has to be more Usser. Says the Chafetz Chaim, that can't be what the Gemara means. The Gemara does not mean that you're more able to publicize than you are to talk privately. So what does the Gemara mean? What does this cryptic, enigmatic statement of the Gemara mean when it says that kol milsa de misamar ba'bitlasa, any words that are said before three people, before a public forum, in a public setting, involves no prohibition of Lashon Hara? What does that mean? So there are basically four understandings in the Rishonim. We only put one on the sheet, source number 5. There are basically four understandings in the Rishonim. We'll try to streamline, we'll try to breeze through four of them, but it was important to note what it didn't mean first. It does not mean that you have license to talk Lashon Hara publicly. What does it mean? So if you look in the Rambam, in source number 5, is in Hilchos Deos, Perek Zayin, Halacha Hey, the Rambam claims that what he thinks the Gemara means, and the Rashbam says something similar in Bava Basra as well, in his commentary, the Rambam says that what it means is as follows. If a person is listening in a crowd of three people, someone comes over to three people and starts saying Lashon Hara, and you're one of those three people listening to Lashon Hara, since you know that this Lashon Hara was already told in front of three people, you know Chavra Islay. Every friend has another friend. Meaning, if I tell you something, I know you're going to tell someone else. And even if you tell me you're the most trustworthy person, I know you're going to tell one other person. And if you tell three people, I know each one of them is going to tell their friends. And ultimately, right, what's going to happen? This is going to spread to the whole world. Chavra, chavra, islay. Every friend has another friend. So basically what's going to happen is anytime someone speaks in public, anytime someone says something publicly in front of three or more people, is apparently the guideline Chazal give us, if you say something publicly, then the people who are listening have a right to assume that this will become public knowledge. Either me or two of my friends next to me will go ahead and spread this, Says the Rambam, a fascinating line, it's very hard to understand at first glance. Says the Rambam, since I know anyways this is bound to become public, since I know everyone's going to know this eventually, I am now allowed to go ahead and repeat it. That's what the Rambam says. I got some funny faces, not in a negative way, meaning like a quizzical kind of, you know. I got some funny faces over here, and that makes sense, because what did we speak about last week? What's the Isser of Lashon Hara? It's about causing damage? No, it's not about causing damage. What is it? It's about bad midos, about bad character flaw, about bespeaking and manifesting and really representing some bad character trait inside of you through the speech that you're saying. So true, in this case, I know this is going to become public. I know people are going to find out about this. But, Lamaisa, what am I doing when I go ahead and spread it? I'm being the same malicious gossip monger, etc. I'm being the same person. I'm doing the same issues that I was doing that we were talking about last week. I'm spreading the rumors. I'm spreading the Lashon Hara. How could the Rambam possibly say that's okay? So the Rambam does walk it back a little bit. He scales it down a little bit. If you look in the bold in source number 5, he says, "V'hu shelo yiskavin lahavir akol uligaloso yoser." Again, the kavan, right? The intent. The pure intentions we spoke about that you're supposed to have and the negative intentions you're not supposed to have, says the Rambam, you're not really just allowed to repeat it or repeat it no matter what. Not allowed to repeat it just because you heard it in the presence of three people, you heard it in public, you can go ahead and repeat it. It's not as simple as that. It has to be that you're repeating it in a very sort of incidental manner. You know, you're talking to people later in the day in a conversation and they raise this issue, they bring up the issue that you heard about, and you, without having any intent to spread it any further or expose it anymore, you relate to the Lashon Hara that was said. You express that you had knowledge of it. You sort of, in an incidental manner, you kind of, derech agav, say, oh yeah, I know what you're talking about, I heard about that. Something very minor like that, says the Rambam, if it's not to add to the fuel to the fire, or if it's not to expose more, or if it's not with a malicious intent, then in that case, if you also heard it in public, it's okay to go ahead and sort of incidentally on the side, in the context of a more general conversation, a more broad conversation, to bring up that point. Now, that's not such an applicable heter, right? So this is going to be a bunch of limitations. It's already one limitation on this heter. It's not really such a heter. Sometimes I can, derech agav, mention incidentally what was going on in the context of broader conversation. So let's leave that for now. That's the Rambam's opinion. Rashi and Arachim, Daf Tes Zayin, we don't have this on the sheet, but Rashi says that the case is as follows. If you heard the Lashon Hara from one person in front of three or more people, you can assume the speaker is mochel. He assumes you're going to spread it. Does that make sense?
Wait, I'm sorry, say it again.
If you heard the Lashon Hara, you're one of three people or more, and you heard the Lashon Hara from one speaker, let's say Jonah is saying the Lashon Hara in front of this whole crowd, and you're in the crowd, so you hear this, you say, oh, well, if Steinmetz said it, he must be mochel. He must assume that I'm going to repeat it. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
it does make
sense.
Good. Well, that's true. But let's say I'm the gossip monger here. I'm the guy who goes around spreading rumors. I'm the guy who's the Baal Avera. So of course I want you to spread my Lashon Hara. I said in public, so you'll spread it. Of course I did. Why does that give you license to perpetuate the Isser? Why does that give you license to push it even further, to take the gossip even farther? Why does that make any sense? So says the Poskim, what Rashi must mean is it's a very limited case. It's a case as follows, where Steinmetz gets up and says a Lashon Hara about himself. I say something about myself. Now it's clear I said it in public, and I assume you guys will spread it. I assume you'll say it to someone else. Says Rashi, in that case, you're allowed to go ahead and spread it because you can assume that I was allowing for that. Now, the other Rishonim don't take this approach. They take the approach that is really talking about the speaker. Rabbeinu Yonah has a very interesting approach. Maybe we'll leave it for now because we're running tight on time. But Tosfos, I think I did not put it on the page, Tosfos in Arachin and Bav Basar, in both places, they quote your Gemara from before, and they say a very fascinating shot in this Gemara. Again, the Gemara said that kol milsim is amar babi klasa, any thing that was said in front of three people, in front of a public forum, is not considered Lashon Hara, and we're not sure what that means. So Tosfos struggled with this as well, and they said there's another funny Gemara, there's another enigmatic Gemara, another cryptic phrase the Gemara has in Arachin and Tesvab. The Gemara says that if a person says Lashon Hara in front of the subject, in front of the person himself, that's not an issue, that's not a problem. Same issue, right? It's related almost in the sense that I don't think it's more mutter to say Lashon Hara just because I'm saying it to the person's face. It's not, I guess, not as sinister, like to say behind their back, but I'm saying it to their face. It's more embarrassing. It's certainly more humiliating. So why is that mutter? So to say, the case is the following case, and this is your case. Imagine the following thing. Someone comes to you and says they need some bread. So you say, oh, bread, go to such and such's house, go to Reuven's house. He's always got a fire going. He's always got an oven cooking. So what does that imply?
He likes to bake.
He likes to bake. Okay, so that could be negative, definitely. Maybe you're pointing out that he has a large, maybe you're pointing out he's a large family, that he likes to flaunt to everyone, that he has a lot of guests all the time. Maybe you're pointing out that he eats a lot. Maybe you're pointing out that he's just, I don't know, very magushim. He's obsessed with gashmias. That could be one understanding. Or it could be, you know, parif or positive. It could be he's a big Baal Chesed. He's always inviting guests over. He's always got a fire going. Or Baruch Hashem, he has a large family. He's working very hard to keep the bread on the table for them, so he's always cooking. That could really go either way. It's mishtameh l'trei anpeh. It could be taken in two different directions. An ambiguous phrasing. Says Tosos, in those cases, very specifically in those cases, where the phrasing is ambiguous, where it could really go in either direction, how do we prove that you had proper intent? How do you prove that you're allowed to say it? So if you're just saying it and there's no context to what you're saying, it's usur, because it sounds like you're implying that something is wrong, you're implying something negative. But if you say it in a context in front of three people, in a public setting, or you say it to the person's face, both of those gemaras, you say it in a public setting, or you say it to a person's face, yeah, he has a fire going all the time, and he's right there. Or I say it in public, yeah, he has a fire going all the time. So I would never get up here and say in front of all of you, embarrass myself, and say Lashon Hara publicly, and disparage the guy. Clearly, it shows, it clarifies my intent, that I am trying to say it in a positive manner. I said an ambiguous phrase. It can be taken in two ways. Choose which way you want to take it. It's clear that I'm saying it in a positive manner. Say Tosos, that's what our Gemara means. Kol milsa misamar ba'ape tlasa. If you have this funny, specific case where you're saying something very ambiguous, very unclear, and can go either way, but you're saying it in public, you're saying it in front of three people, then that's not Lashon Hara, because we can assume your intent was for the positive manifestation of those words. We can assume your intent was the power of a positive way of saying, oh yeah, Reuven, he's got a big family, Baruch Hashem, Kanai Nahar, he's cooking for them, he's a good place to go, he gets a lot of guests, a big Baal Chesed, etc. Says Tosfos, that's what our Gemara was talking about, that's what your Gemara from before was talking about as well. It can really go either way, and it's clarified by the context in which you say it.
But if only one person asked me for a cup of sugar, and I say, go to my neighbor because she likes to...
Yeah, then it would not seem to apply, correct. Tosfos explained that Gemara.
How is that Lashon Hara?
It's,
I don't understand how that... The other criteria that you said before...
So if you think that it can't be taken the wrong way, it's not Lashon Hara, you're 100% right.
Okay,
if it's
so
something
it
that,
be.
Yeah, it cannot be Lashon Hara, it can be Lashon Hara, it depends on context.
It's like debate, I can't see anything negative.
Okay, then, you know, you're a lot more righteous than me. I could see how that phrasing could be negative, but you're right. If you're right and the context does not determine that it could be negative, then you're 100% right, then there should be no issue with it, 100%.
So it depends on your intent.
It depends on your intent and the context, and the way it could be taken by the people around you.
They say in general, once that you should never talk anything about people.
Someone mentioned that last week. Maybe we'll get there. That is a complicated discussion. It's not as simple and cut and dry as you're saying, but it is something to deal with. 100%. Oh, that shear was great. Yeah, but he can't grow facial hair, whatever you think of. Fine, good. In source number 6, the Chavetz Chaim points out, in Klal Beis and Sif Yud, the Chavetz Chaim points out that he quotes all of these Rishonim. He mentions all four of these groups of Rishonim, and he deals with each and every one. And at the end he says, you know what? We pass him like all of them. Oh boy. So it's not like he's Rav Daniel Feldman, who wrote a book on Lashon Hara. We'll quote at the end of the shir. He points out that's not a case of hedging, he calls it. It's not a case where he's not sure which one's right. He thinks all the Rishonim are right. And so you have to combine all of these limitations in order to use this heter of Ape Tlasa, which means basically, and Chavetz Chaim says this himself, if I can find it quickly, I'll say it. Shekemat in la makom b'mitzias, in source number 6, there's no real case where you're actually going to be able to use this heter. It basically is inapplicable. It's basically rendered obsolete by all the limitations of the Rishonim. So we're stuck at square one, because we said we wanted to prove that maybe there's a heter to Lashon Hara, if it's public knowledge, if it's something that everyone knows already, if it's something that's really already publicized and widely disseminated. So then, now that I'm publishing it, now that I'm writing about it, or now that I'm reading it maybe, and I'm digesting it, whatever it might be, in those cases, maybe it's not usur because it's public knowledge, but we just saw the Gemara is shot down by all the Rishonim. The Gemara, if we pass like the Gemara, and it's not clear that we do, but if we pass like the Gemara, the Chavetz Chaim said we have to pass like all the Rishonim about the Gemara, and if you add up all the Rishonim, it adds up to basically saying there's no such hatter, there's no such case where that applies, and that's a funny thing. But I can save us a little bit. If you turn the page to page 2, source number 7, the Chavetz Chaim, I gave you one example, a representative example, but if you look in, I don't know, at least 4 or 5 other places in Chavetz Chaim, you'll find the same idea. The Chavetz Chaim spells out, and this is in the same klal from before, the Chavetz Chaim spells out in klal Beis, that in most cases it's usher to speak Lashon Hara, even if it's public, even if you're going to know that it's going to be in front of three people. Av Misha Shamay Menu, if you heard from him, usher, that's what you say, usher, Leilich Acher Kach, Al Smach Hazeh, She'amar Lo Amasaper Lo, you can't rely on the fact that it was told to you, and then repeat it. She'shama Darver Zeb Api Klasi, you heard it in public. Ule Saper La Acher Meha Gnus She'shama Al Shimon, and now you want to go to the next person and spread that rumor. You can't do that. Says the Chavetz Chaim, Im lo shekvar nisparsim adavar v'noda lakol. The exception to the case where you actually are allowed to spread the Lashon Hara, you are allowed to repeat what you heard, you are allowed to say it to the next person, to your neighbor, says the Chavetz Chaim, Im lo shekvar nisparsim adavar v'noda lakol. If it's just told to three people and you can assume it's going to be publicized, so then even though it's true, we can assume it's eventually going to become public knowledge. What am I really adding? That's not okay. The Rishonim shoot that down. Says the Chafetz Chaim, if it's already public knowledge, if the whole world knows what happened, if it's already been in the newspaper, it's already been on the internet, everyone knows what's going on in your society, everyone knows the deal, it's nisparsem lakol, it's yadua lakol, everyone knows about this, says the Chafetz Chaim, in that case, there's no isser of Lashon Hara, maker adin. Now the post can point this out. Many of the poskim, Rav Shlomo Rosner, who wrote a tshuva, who wrote the sefer of Shalos Tshuvos in general about the halachas of Lashon Hara, I think it's called Shalos Tshuvos Lechavet Lechaim. So he has a tshuva where he points this out, that if you read in the newspapers that someone went through some family issue or someone committed a crime or whatever it might be, and that's a widely disseminated newspaper in your community, in the world, whatever it is, and it's on the internet, or it's on the blogs, wherever you saw it, and you know it's public knowledge, so you'd be allowed to tell it to your neighbor because you're not really adding much. It's already public, and you haven't added anything at all. And again, if you were the newspaper and the story was already public, the story already broke, so in publishing it on your own news site, in your own newspaper, wouldn't be adding any fuel to the fire. I mean, maybe if you had, again, malicious intent and you were doing it for the wrong reasons, we'd have to talk about it. But the truth is that if you just, strictly speaking, published something that was already well-known, already publicized, says the Chafetz Chaim, that is not, strictly speaking, considered Lashon Hara. Now, this posek, Rav Shlomo Rosner, as well as the other posek, Moshe Kaufman and others, point out, like we just said, you have to keep in mind your intent. You can't exaggerate. You can't blow it out of proportions. You can't do it hatefully. You can't do it with anger. You can't add details. You can't do any of these things that we said before that you can't do. But strictly speaking, if it's already public knowledge, to go ahead and share it with someone else would not be an issue. Now, that saves the newspapers, and it saves us in some ways. It saves the newspapers because they can publish a story that's already public, and it saves us because we're allowed to either consume or, let's say for now, pass along to others what's already generally known to the public. One thing you have to contend with is how long is something considered public knowledge? Now, something might have been published in the newspapers in 1955, but I never read that newspaper, so I don't know what happened, or even in 1995, or 1999, or 2001. I don't know, I read the story at one point, but I might have forgotten about it. I might have read it last year and forgotten about it. So much has happened since then. How do I necessarily know if I remember everything, and how do I know the public remembers everything? So just because you think something's public doesn't necessarily mean everyone knows about it. And so you have to start to wonder, what's considered public knowledge? Is a year too long? Is 2 years too long? There is discussion in the posting about this. I wonder if the whole thing is a moot point nowadays with the internet, because it's true that I read an article in 2010 and I forgot what happened since then. It's already been 9 years, 10 years since then. So I forgot what happened, but if I wanted, by the click of a button, I would find that story once again. And the person next to me, there's no reason to believe he didn't Google it yesterday. And the person next to him, there's no reason to believe they didn't Google it 2 weeks ago. So maybe information has just become set in our minds, again, not on top of our minds, which is a problem with how we use our memory and how we learn nowadays. It ruined the way we learn. But in a positive sense, we're always able to access information. The access to that information maybe makes everything more public, more regularly. And so perhaps that would help contribute to the heter of newspapers publishing and of us spreading the published news that was publicized and widely disseminated to everyone. So that helps for journalists, for publishers, for editors. Yeah. Exactly. So I only focus. You're right. I only focus on the journalist. But in terms of the publisher and the journalist and the editor and the distributor, whoever else we're talking about, it can't be malicious and it can't be the intent of hate or anger or retribution or anything of that nature. That's also true about the reader who now goes ahead and tells his neighbor about it. You can't just be a gossip monger. This isn't licensed to become a Baal Lashon Hara. This isn't licensed to change your character to be flawed and to be in the wrong way. It has to be sort of scaled back. What I'm talking to my neighbor about has to be for a good reason, or for at least a healthy reason to discuss what's going on, either to keep us safe together or to keep us informed together or to make sure that we know all the details, to keep someone from learning Lashon Hara. You read in a legitimate source and they read it in a fake news source. So you want to make sure that you're tempering what other people read. All those reasons are good, but you're 100% right. If the malicious intent is there, so then all bets are off and we really shouldn't be talking like that no matter what. But this is all really we've been talking about, journalists and writers and publishers and editors and all those people. What about us, the more common case of readers of the news? So what do we have to talk about over here? What do we have to contend with? So we know there's an isser to speak Lashon Hara, and there's a lot of psukim that confirm that, but there's also psukim that confirm that there's an isser to be mekabel Lashon Hara, to accept Lashon Hara. The Chafetz Chaim draws a distinction between someone who's mekabel Lashon Hara, who accepts Lashon Hara, and who hears Lashon Hara without accepting it. Now, that's a very fine line, and some of the posts can debate whether the Chafetz Chaim could be taken literally on that or not, and whether we should really apply that to ourselves, but there's such an issue of hearing or being accepting of Lashon Hara. So should that apply to reading material as well? What do you think? Quite obviously, right? I would think quite obviously. It's intuitive. If you look in source number 9, he spells it out. Kol davar sheyesh lo hamesaper iser avor diburo, yesh al makabel iser avor kabbalah. So if the person who's speaking is not allowed to say it, then you should not be allowed to hear it. So we said before, a person is not allowed to write Lashon Hara because the issue is not talking, it's communicating. So you should not be allowed to accept it through writing, which is read as reading, you should not be allowed to read the writing either, because you're accepting that communication. You're the other end of that communication. So that is, I think, pretty clear, pretty black and white, that if a person wanted to consume the newspaper, wanted to read the newspaper and read the Daily Digest and read the news that's going on, so you'd have to take into account the Issurim of Lashon Hara. You'd have to pay attention to what is and what is not permitted and navigate in a proper manner. There are two points I want to point out that are not halacha l'maisa. I'm not passing. I'm just raising two, I think they're both kulas, two things that poskim raise in regards to this point. Rav David Aryav, in a sefer called L'Re'echa Kamocha, which is the compendium of different halachos of Bein Adam L'Chavero, so there's a section on Isser of Lashon Hara and Leitzana. So in that section, Rav David Aryav points out that if a newspaper already published this material and it's out there in the public and the whole world is reading it, and you're a tzaddik and you decide not to read this article, so you haven't really helped anyone. I mean, you haven't stopped it from spreading, you haven't kept it from becoming true, you haven't done anything to stop this. So the fact that you're keeping yourself from reading this article doesn't really help anyone. If it's widely publicized already, like we saw in the Chavetz Chaim before, if it's already public knowledge to everyone, then you reading it doesn't really matter. You're not doing anything wrong, even if it was published Be'isser. Even if the person who published it should not have published it, you reading it, you didn't really add much. Now, I think that can be debated because that's true, but should we show support to someone who's publishing Lashon Hara? Should we buy into that process? Should we be a part of it? That's something to deal with, but strictly speaking, he says, if it's already public knowledge, you're not adding anything by buying and reading that newspaper. One other point that's raised by Rav Moshe Kaufman, which I think is really fascinating, and again, should be taken lightly for now, not be taken lightly and not be acted upon until you confirm it with a real posek, but Rav Moshe Kaufman points out that today's world is completely different than the Chavetz Chaim's world. The Chavetz Chaim world had information, had a flow of information, but the world has changed entirely. If you don't know what's going on every couple of hours, every day, every couple of minutes, whatever it might be, depending on the case, you could miss out in a big way. And that could be in terms of your health and your safety, but that could also be in terms of more minor things like business dealings or even shopping deals, whatever it might be. If you're not constantly on the ball, if you're not constantly up with the flow of information, you could lose out in a big way. Says Rav Moshe Kaufman, he's not sure if the Chavetz Chaim would have said the same things about Shmias Lashon Hara nowadays. Accepting Lashon Hara and hearing Lashon Hara and really bringing it into your heart, he would have thought is totally usher. To be makabel something disparaging would be definitely wrong, but to read a newspaper and to try to digest the information that's being given around you, to benefit from those things and grow in your daily living and make sure you're on top of the game and make sure that you're not losing out, says Rav Moshe Kaufman, maybe the Chavetz Chaim would have retracted in our modern society. I'm not sure, I definitely wouldn't put my unimportant stamp on it right now without confirming the bigger posek, but it's something to think about, both of these issues in terms of the fact that you're not adding any fuel to the fire by consuming the newspaper, and in terms of the fact that this information is really relevant in so many ways to so many people at so many times, that maybe the whole issue has to be reconsidered in a different way. One thing is certainly true. If you look at source number 10, you'll read this maybe at home because we're sort of out of time, but this beautiful sefer by Daniel Z. Feldman, it's more of a book than a sefer, I guess, but I think he would like to call it a sefer. False Facts and True Rumors, Lashon Hara in Contemporary Culture. It's Hilchos Lashon Hara, but the reason why I call it more of a book is because he adds so much in the realm of psychology, in the realm of studies, in the sense that he talks about all of the issues of the halachos of Lashon Hara, and he really did an amazing job of that, but then he adds in at the end of every chapter pages and pages of how society really relates to these challenges. And he points out so many of the challenges of the internet. Again, some of them were brought up today, the polarization of the information, the lack of ability to verify the accuracy of the information, the teaming up, the political negativity, things like that that occur on the internet. A person has to be very careful when they're consuming information on the internet, on social media, and in the daily newspaper. It has to be that it's true. There are reasons that we should publish certain news, and there are reasons that we should read certain news. And maybe that's a more expansive heter, maybe it's a less expansive heter. I don't know. We raise some of the issues, and a person has to consider in each case. But one thing we have to be very careful about is being discerning and being noticing what's right and what's wrong and what doesn't smell right and what smells funny and what should avoid, and look at the internet and look at the newspaper and look at the blogs and try to find how to navigate what I should click, what I shouldn't read. And with that, hopefully all of us will maintain the proper Jewish speech ethic and move forward in our goal over the summer and the rest of our lives of becoming not Bali Lashon Hara, but Bali Lashon in the sense that we talk in the proper manner, we relate to people in the proper manner, and we consume information in the proper manner.
Amen.
Thank you.